This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 6, 2015. I'm Caleb Brown. The newly unveiled Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement will create a large trading bloc across the Pacific Ocean, but there's at least one notable country not included, China. Dan Eikenson, director of the Herbert A. Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, comments.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership is a trade agreement between 12 countries on four continents. Those countries comprise about one-third of global trade flows and about 40% of global GDP.
And yet, the United States is involved, some other Asian countries are involved, but China is not.
China is not. In fact, at the outset of the expression of U.S. interest in this enterprise, the TPP was sort of the economic centerpiece of the U.S. pivot to Asia, and it was pitched within the administration as an undertaking to show that we're back despite 10 years of misadventure in the Middle East and a lack of attention on other issues. We're back and we're here to sort of check China's rise. And I always thought that that was a pretty bad way to characterize this. There's no need to be provocative like that. And ultimately, we want China to be in this agreement. It'll be much more economically meaningful. And ultimately, I think we will get China in this deal. It might not be called the TPP. It might be called a free trade area of the Asia Pacific, and that might happen in a few years. There are several countries that want to join the TPP right away.
So China could be added at any time, or these other countries could be added later.
Yeah, they could be added later. China is probably a few years away at least. There are a lot of laws and regulations that will need to be sort of revamped to bring up standards, regulatory standards, and environmental laws and labor laws and things like that. Korea will probably dock first, join it first, then maybe the Philippines and Thailand, Indonesia, Taiwan.
How does this get us to freer, more unfettered trade around the world?
Yeah, that's a good question because we've always been a bit skeptical of these trade agreements. They are not free trade, they're managed trade. It is to a certain extent corporate welfare if you think it in terms of what is the driving force behind them. It's business telling U.S. policymakers to open these markets and keep ours closed. But in the process of negotiating, we do open ours, and so consumers and taxpayers and import-using companies will benefit. The reason TPP has been important is because from the Second World War until 1994, we had eight rounds of successful, massive trade liberalization around the world. The last round was the Uruguay round, concluded in 1994. It created the World Trade Organization. And there's the one large multilateral trade negotiating round launched under the auspices of the WTO was the Doha round. It was launched in 2001. It hasn't come to fruition. So that avenue for trade liberalization has basically died. It's really close to impossible to negotiate with 160 countries to reduce these trade barriers. So the TPP sort of emerged as a substitute, as an alternative. Let's get countries that are more likely to be able to come to an agreement more quickly, develop some best practices, and see whether or not these best practices can be adopted ultimately by the WTO.
In terms of the nuts and bolts of it for import-using businesses, domestic American consumers, U.S. exporters, what's the upside?
Well, right now there are lots of barriers that are still in place. There are still tariffs. There are rules that make it more difficult for foreign companies to set up shop in Malaysia, for example. There are protections of government procurement spending, and government procurement in many countries is allocated for domestic companies only. So this will enable businesses to produce to greater economies of scale, reduce unit costs, pass on better prices to consumers around the world. Barriers, impede with these transactions, and they raise the cost of them. So if we have agreements that reduce those barriers, it stands to reason that we will benefit. And you see a lot of economic analysis that attach numbers to these agreements. This will create, $200 billion of extra GDP per year. I just don't attach a whole lot of credence to those numbers. They're ballpark estimates, and it depends on the actual numbers. But this is a step toward economic liberalization.
And even if it doesn't contribute to GDP per se, lowering prices is a useful thing that may not contribute to GDP.
That's right. You know, there's a dimension here. There's sort of a geopolitical dimension which we touched upon with China. And I think ultimately passage of the TPP through Congress is going to require repetition of the fact that this agreement excludes China. That sells. Americans generally embrace trade, but when you talk about trade with China, they're very skeptical, as is Congress. So I think the president is going to have to tout that, that it doesn't include China. But ultimately, China should be involved in this deal for us to reap the benefits. Meanwhile, we're also negotiating with the Europeans the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, which is also a sort of a 21st century high standards agreement. And when that's concluded, if it's concluded, that's a longer shot, I think, than the TPP. We will have a lot of infrastructure in place. There's a lot of trade architecture that's going to need to be synthesized, and that's going to be a pretty rigorous undertaking. But you believe in the rule of law. We need the rule of law in international trade, and that's what this is trying to accomplish.
Are there countries that would like to be a part of this agreement that because their institutions aren't strong enough, that they actually can't build the infrastructure necessary to live up to the standards that this agreement demands?
Yes, I think that is the case. That said, I don't think the standards in the Trans-Pacific Partnership—
And we're talking about environmental standards. We're talking about labor standards, that sort of thing.
Yeah, product safety, sanitary standards and things like that. I think many countries just assumed that they would not qualify. At the outset of the TPP, there was a lot of very high-minded rhetoric about these 21st century standards. I'm not sure that the TPP accomplished that level of high standard. It might be, you know, approaching it, but not as rigorous. But we'll find out in the coming days. But what TPP has done, it has put governments on notice, saying, "Hey, if we want to be part of this architecture, if we want to be able to compete effectively to attract investment, we need to, you know, upgrade our environment." Not the environment in the green sense, but our policy environment, our regulatory environment. So we've seen reforms undertaken already in India and China and Indonesia and the Philippines, sort of in preparation for their bid to join the TPP. And what that really amounts to is unilateral trade liberalization. These are countries doing what's in their best interest, and that's almost good enough. They're improving their standards right now. Eventually, they would get into an agreement and avail themselves of the benefits of access to markets and access to supply chains and things like that. But I think this is setting a good example, and it's motivating governments to take the future into consideration.
Dan Eikenson is director of the Herbert A. Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Read more on free trade versus managed trade at our website, cato.org.